Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your sometime host, Ann Saxelby, back in the host seat. Very excited about that. I'm here today with Emily Acosta as my co-host and with Nick Bain, who is a cheese writer for CheeseRank.com, winner of the 2015 New York City CMI and a monger at Bedford Cheese. And we're going to be joined eventually on the phone here by Dave Arnold, who is the host of Cooking Issues on HRN, as well as, a culinary guru. So we're going to be very happy to talk to him. Today's show is all about cheese storage. So we're going to be talking about different ways to store cheese, different theories, different techniques, different products. And so we're going to get into all that. But first, we have some public service announcements from Emily.
Absolutely. And it's so nice to be here with you, Anne. I was a big fan of the show before I started producing it, and I would always listen to you. And this is the first time we're on together. So that's really exciting.
It's so great.
Yay, fun times. So just wanted to reiterate from last week, if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, be sure to check out the new and improved HeritageRadioNetwork.org and tweet us from the show page because we want to hear from you. It's very exciting. And also, spoke with Carlos Yescas of the Cheese Coalition. And as you may or may not be aware, the FDA has requested information on best practices concerning raw milk cheese. And the last day to submit will be November 2nd of this year. They're requesting comments in three different areas. The practices to minimize pathogens other than aging, which is the 60-day rule, alternative testing during manufacturing, and consumer attitudes. So the Old Ways Cheese Coalition is helping to gather info on point number three, which is consumer attitudes, with a brief survey online. And if you want to learn more about that organization, tune into Cutting the Curd episode number 218. I'm going to be putting a link to that survey on our Instagram, Cutting the Curd. So it's just at Cutting the Curd, one word. And definitely check that out. Take the survey if you have time.
Fill it out. It's really important to, I think, a lot of artisanal cheesemakers in our country and continuing artisanal practices that we get good consumer feedback to the FDA so they can really see how people do think about cheeses in the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all want it. We all want more raw milk cheese, not less.
Yes. Amen.
So, Nick, we'll start off with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It is an honor and a privilege.
So cheese storage, you recently wrote an article about this for CheeseRank.com. And so what is your personal philosophy on the best way to store cheese, both, I guess, as in the shop and in the home for the consumer?
Yeah, I did. To be fair, I actually wrote that article for Carlos's Cheese Coalition for Old Ways.
Oh, there you go.
Sorry about that.
So, yeah, well, it's a nice little segue, though, isn't it? So I think a lot of people get caught up at home without asking the question of how to store cheese and end up using a lot of saran wrap and a lot of plastic wrap and just tossing their cheese in the fridge. We've had customers who are on the extreme of that who every now and then will come into the shop and say, you know, I held this, I bought this wheel of this soft cheese and I held it in my fridge for a month and now it's turned black. Is it okay to eat? And of course, we discourage them at that point, and it probably tastes terrible too. And what I generally encourage is to embrace the idea that cheese is a fantastic ecosystem for living, breathing microbes and mold. And you can't really trap mold in an environment where it can't breathe and it can't interact properly with any sort of aeration. I think the idea that air is completely our enemy is a bad one for cheese storage. So while you will see in somewhere like Bedford Cheese Shop or any cheese store in the United States that cheese is displayed within saran wrap, that's really only for short-term storage because that's taken out of that saran wrap regularly to be sampled to customers, to be cut to customers. It's not meant for anything long-term.
And in fact, it kind of adversely affects the flavor. I always tell, you know, cheesemongers when I'm training them, I do a little test where I cut a piece of cheese that's been touching the plastic wrap, and then I'll cut another small sliver that's just behind it. And I'm like, just taste the difference.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's kind of funny. Everyone's like, oh, it's like, oh, yeah, like it's kind of amazing. It just makes it taste a little stale. Well, So we see this at cheese shops, but again, this is short term. So if you're going to take a piece of cheese home, what do you recommend? I know there's the foil theory, there's the parchment theory,
And well, just on top of what you said too, if you are a cheesemonger who is listening, I think it is totally productive to once you take a cheese out of plastic wrap, give it a quick little scrape with your knife before you sample it out to a customer, because all that butter fat can kind of get trapped between the surface of the cheese and the plastic wrap and some ammoniation stuff. But if you're taking a cheese home, there are, I'd say, two different methods a person can use. If you are as big of a cheese nerd as I am, or just need to store some cheese for a long time in your fridge, I would say the best method is to go out and buy some specialty cheese paper. There are companies like Formaticum that sell this. And what it is a two-ply paper where you basically have a very thin layer of paper surface, and inside of that is attached a polyethylene perforated paper. And what's nice about that is it keeps the paper layer separate from the cheese. So you have a very thin, breathable space for the cheese where there is some air interaction. It's not trapping any ammoniating molds inside of there.
Yeah, it doesn't dry it out,
exactly.
But allows it to breathe.
It allows it to breathe, but doesn't dry it out.
And so you can get this stuff on formaticum.com. You can buy it at certain shops. I'm sure, do you guys sell it at Bedford?
We sometimes sell it at Bedford. You can also find it at shops like Whisk. There are a lot of other specialty shops.
Brooklyn Larder
definitely carries it. And all around the country, I'm pretty sure there are some stores similar to Sur La Table or Williams-Sonoma that carry something similar. You can definitely find this stuff. It's a little more expensive, but it's really, really great for storing cheese. Now, if you don't have access to that, or you don't want to shell out for that, and that's understandable, the best practice that I always suggest is using parchment paper, which is also a very breathable paper that won't stick to the surface of your cheese. Your softer cheeses, it will come off easily from them. Not waxed paper, but parchment paper. And then if you need to hold on to the cheese for a longer time, wrap your cheese form-fittingly, but not super tightly in that parchment paper, and then you can wrap that all in aluminum foil, which creates that two-ply layer, basically, the same idea as the cheese paper. I should add, though, I am not personally an advocate of keeping cheese in your fridge for a long time. I think you should buy cheese for what you want to do. So when you sample a cheese at a cheese shop, what you taste should be what you want to eat. If you hold on to a cheese for too long, that taste is going to change. Proteolysis is still occurring, molds and bacteriums are interacting with that cheese, and it's going to change the flavor of the cheese from where you tasted it. Now, you can do this intentionally. If you're someone like me, you might buy a whole wheel of Camembert while it's young and maybe age it up a little bit if you want to make it more robust. But mostly we're not buying whole wheels of cheese, we're buying wedges, and those will be affected adversely. They will dry out, they'll get hard as a rock. If you've ever kept a Parmigiano Reggiano or something like Mahon, or any firmer Grana style cheese in your fridge, they will get rock solid, and you can really only use them in soup.
So what's the time frame that you think is appropriate to hang on to a piece of cheese?
When a customer asks me that, I generally recommend eating the cheese within a week. I generally give them a two-week limit. You can keep a cheese appropriately wrapped for a month in your fridge. There will be little changes.
And so you tell surface mold, you tell people, you know.
Yeah, you can just scrape off surface mold if it appears. I mean, it's going to appear. Scratch off a little bit of that. And it's still perfectly edible. Now, that surface mold will start to get more and more robust as age goes on, and it'll find its way into the paste of the cheese, and that's really going to change the flavor. So that's why I recommend within 1 to 2 weeks I also recommend keeping the cheese within the crisper of the fridge. That's the most humidity and temperature controlled environment you can find within the fridge.
It's not exposed to the airflow quite as much.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And newer fridges, you can also control the humidity within that crisper. So if you want to raise or lower the humidity for a particular style of cheese on your more newfangled expensive fridges, you can absolutely do that. It's a better environment for that that cheese to be maintained.
Well, I have to confess, I recently, so this was like a not intended affinage project at my house. Our refrigerator shit the bed a couple months ago, and I thought it was completely broken, but it turns out we just needed a fan replaced. But I threw out most of the stuff that was in the fridge, but there were like a couple chorizos and like a piece of West Blue from Parish Hill Creamery via Crown Finish Caves that was wrapped in some foil, and I was like, I couldn't bring myself to throw it away because it was like, you know, just like a beautiful aged cheese. Anyways, the fridge ended up being off for probably 5 days while we waited for the guy to come with this replacement part. And still, I was just like, well, you know, I think I'm just going to hold on to it. And we actually, so this was like literally a month ago probably, and we just ate it for dinner like two nights ago with some friends that came over, and we like carved it up and had it with some nice butter on bread. And man, it was tasty.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's just funny because, yeah, sometimes cheese can really go south, but, you know, sometimes it can also be good. And I feel like it's also good to always emphasize to consumers that, you know, yeah, cheese is a living product, but that doesn't mean that mold is the devil and, like, it's already preserved. So, like, you know, it's okay to, like, you know, not freak out about cheese storage and, oh, I have to throw it away. Chances are you don't have to throw it away.
Totally. I like it when blue lines develop in my cheddars. I think it makes them delicious.
Exactly. Yeah. Or if you have a Blumirein cheese that's gone like too spicy and weird, like mix it up with some cream and make some macaroni and cheese. You know, there's always like a good use.
I, as we were talking about before the show, I was recently traveling in Gruyere with Gruyere AOP to see Gruyere production out there. Really fantastic people. And I brought home some very cheeses you can't get in this country. I wouldn't say entirely illegal, but borderline illegal, and certainly stuff I wasn't supposed to bring back from Switzerland.
Had the dogs at the airport sniffing voraciously.
You know, there was a beagle that looked kind of hungry, and I was worried about him.
Yeah.
No, they're more worried about a stick I brought back, of all things. Weird.
Could hit somebody with that,
yeah,
in the airport.
Totally.
You never
absolutely
know. It's
and
a weapon.
And the Swiss are very neutral. You have to watch out for them.
Yeah.
but I brought back, there was a Gruyere cheesemaker, and all the cheesemakers out there have their own small shops within the villages to supplement their income of cheesemaking. And from leftover milk, he had made these tomes de patron, which is basically his house tome, little gooey sort of reblochon style thing. And I tried to bring it back home, and I successfully brought it back home. But in between Switzerland and New York City, they vacuum packed it. The Swiss seem to be very in favor of this for anyone who's possibly traveling. All the shops in Geneva have vacuum sealers. A lot of the cheese shops in Freiburg have vacuum sealers, which helped because it kept a lot of air out. But that's only for a short-term storage. I wouldn't suggest anyone do that for a really long-term thing.
Or you like sous vide your cheese. You kind of change it.
Exactly. You kind of change it a little bit. It's kind of the same idea as doing it for a grocery store. And sure, for firmer cheeses, those will keep for a long time without that air in a grocery store. But for a softer cheese, it's not a great thing. It's really still very active and proteolizing, and the ammonia will build up within there no matter what you do. But this went in and out of refrigeration for a week. There were days where I was traveling for 12 hours out of the day, and I had that cheese with me out of refrigeration, and certainly for the flight back, it was out of refrigeration, and it actually developed pretty nicely, I have to say, over the course of a few days. It's really robust, beautiful thing.
It's kind of like, you know, in the old days, like the, you know, transporting liquor via ship, the India IPAs, like, or, you know, India Pale Ales, you know, developed because of weather conditions and long voyages and port, likewise, would benefit from, you know, fluctuations in temperature. So you're just doing that in a micro scale.
Yeah, there we go.
So,
ingenious.
Well, we are going to take a very quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Dave Arnold on the show with us, and we're going to focus on saran wrap and cling wrap, every cheesemonger's best friend and worst nightmare. Stay with us.
1996, L Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
All right, and we are back on Cutting the Curd. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Be sure to check out the brand new Heritage Radio website at heritageradionetwork.org. And Dave Arnold, thank you so much for being on the show with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, so for all of our listeners, Dave is the host of Cooking Issues, which is a great show on the network here, so everyone should listen into that. And Dave is also one of the founders of MoFab, the Museum of Food and Drink, which I'm told is about to open its lab pretty soon. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, right on Bayard Street in Brooklyn, 60. What is it? Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. It's like 62 Bayard, and we're gonna have a big exhibition on kind of the birth and history of the flavor industry. It should be fun.
That is awesome. So when is that? When's the launch? When's the kickoff?
There's a bunch of dates. It's towards the end of October. I don't remember which one's the public date, but I've been literally, my head's been just underwater working on it so much that I can't even think about it because everything I needed, it's, my brain is on total fry. But go to mofad.org and you can buy tickets so that you can just show up, at your ticket time. Although honestly, you could probably also do walk-ins as well if you wanted to.
That's awesome. I cannot wait to check it out. Okay, so we wanted to talk to you today about cling wrap / saran wrap. And, so we're just going to have sort of like a free-form discussion, but I feel like saran wrap is an item that is ubiquitous in the cheese industry. It is something that bedevils every new cheesemonger learning how the hell to work with it. It is my personal talent. If I was ever on Miss America, that would be my talent. I would saran wrap things for people because I can do it very well and prettily. But we wanted to talk to you a little bit about kind of, what saran wrap is made of, what's the history, what are the culinary uses, what did people use before saran wrap, whichever any or all of those questions you want to answer.
Well, I mean, The thing about saran, right, or whatever you want to call, saran is actually like a brand name, right? And even though saran wrap is a brand name, saran wrap has actually changed its formulation over the years, okay? So the saran wrap of today, even if you were literally to go buy saran wrap of today is not the same thing as a saran wrap of 15 years ago. And in fact, the saran wrap of 15 years ago was much more kind of oxygen impermeable. So like a saran wrap of like 15 years ago, if you were to stick that over an avocado, let's say, or if you were to stick it over a piece of cheese that is liable to oxidation, as some are, right? Mm-hmm. Then it's going to be much less of a preservative than the saran wrap of today. The saran wrap of today and pretty much all of the decent plastic wraps are all polyethylene, right? And the reason people use polyethylene is it doesn't have a lot of nasty crap. It's fairly inert. It's good food grade kind of thing. But again, it's not as oxygen impermeable as the older stuff. But that's not as big a deal on most cheese. Most cheeses aren't going to die from oxidation because they age anyway. Some will change flavor. Like, how when you break open like a wheel of cheese, like a Parmesan, right, that's been aging for a couple of years, it starts oxidizing. It tastes good because that's what we're used to, but like it tastes slightly different the second you crack it open versus like an hour later. You know what I'm talking about,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And saran is not going to change that, which is, okay, now couple this with this. Most commercial plastic wrap in the day, it might be changing now, I haven't looked at the chemistry recently, but most commercial plastic wrap was PVC, right? PVC film.
Yeah.
Now, most PVC film is really crappy, right? So it has a couple of problems. It stinks. It physically stinks. So, if you were to, check out a bunch of different wraps, and you were to crumple them up and put them in your nose and sniff them, you'd notice that a lot of, especially the cheaper, commercial wraps, have a plastic odor. And 100% that transfers to the face of the cheese. 100%.
Yep.
Now, obviously, how much it transfers to the cheese is a function of, typically how fatty the cheese is, right? So, the fattier the cheese, kind of, in my opinion, or my experience, I should say, the greater the transfer you're going to get of that kind of nasty plastic aroma. And I guess it could go vice versa, right? The plastic's going to pick it up. That's called scalping. I don't know how much scalping of flavor you're going to get, but as you know, if you've had something in wrap for a long time, right, the actual eating phase, as opposed to the rind, nothing happens to the rind because it's dry there, right? And not a lot's happening. But at the what I'll call the cut phase, most of the time, what you'll do is you'll shave off a little bit so that you get that fresh piece. And that's not just because of moisture changes, but I think also flavor changes at that surface space, especially if you're using PVC. Does this make any sense or no?
Absolutely. No, we were talking about that on the beginning of the show. And in fact, it seems like things have changed in the industry more for direct-to-consumer products than they have for food service products, which I find interesting because as cheesemongers, we all use the nasty stuff that has the PVC in it, which is kind of, disturbing. But it seems like, things have changed more on the consumer end than the food service end. Do you have any comments on why you think that is?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's, it would just be another expense to have it. Remember, when you're doing on the direct-to-consumer stuff, the packaging units that those folks have, a lot of those guys are doing vac-down packs in straight kind of plan. You can get kind of decent bags for that aren't going to affect the flavor so much, that don't have much of an aroma. If you pick up, most store cheddars, right? And you smell the bag smells like cheddar, which means that there is some scalping, but the bag doesn't smell like plastic. It smells pretty much like a cheddar. That's because in the machines that they're running, those are the films that they use. Whereas typically our cling films are perforce thinner because we need a lot of it to be on that roll. So we can't have that thick thing. We need it to be relatively inexpensive.
Super
also
stretchy.
What did you say?
Super stretchy.
Yeah, super stretchy. It needs to be a bunch of things that a commercial packaging film does not need to be. And so, they can do kind of different things. Now, what a lot of people will do, if you have the money and time and you're so inclined, I mean, to me, the ultimate is the wax paper wrap with the plastic over the top. Because nothing's going to happen to the cheese because it's wrapped in the plastic, but a lot of times that wax paper stuff's going to unfold. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you disagree. Maybe you think it messes up the humidity. I don't know.
That's what we do at the shop. That's a good, cheap, I feel interim solution. We put wax on the cut surface of the cheese when we're storing it. When it's on display, then we put the Saran direct or the cling wrap directly on it. But when we're storing it, it's wax paper with cling wrap on the outside.
Same with our shop. Yeah.
Right. Because the customer wants to see the customer wants to see the cheese, but you don't want all those things. Yeah. Because remember, I'm not going to call out any names, but you remember the way that Dina DeLuca used to store their cheese. They'd have that delicious looking, and then it would just be out there, and the cut faces would be open, and you're like, oh my God, what are they doing to that cheese? You remember what I'm talking about?
Yep, I do. I saw that. Yep, with my eyes. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if they still do that, because I haven't been to Dina DeLuca in decades.
Well,
but it's like,
and in France, one of my favorite cheese shop in France is this little place called Laurent Dubois, and the whole store is climate controlled, so they don't have to wrap anything because it's just climate and humidity controlled, and you can just put all these cheeses out, cut, not cut, and they're beautiful. But so for the most of us, that's not quite the same. We don't have the same options. But let me ask you this,
Dave.
Yeah,
wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, I know.
And also remember, different cheeses want to be a different thing. So unless you have a bunch of cases controlled differently, how are you going to hold this fresh goat, and you're going to hold that next to like a wheel of a Cheshire. How the hell are you going to do that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you're going to get real specific about it, it's true. It's very true. It's very true.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this, Dave. What did people do, you know, cheesemongers, cooks, et cetera, before the advent of cling wrap? How did people store stuff and keep it, you know, airtight and fresh?
Well, I mean, I think people probably put up with a lot more kind of not ideal quality on things. I mean, look, again, a lot depends on the atmosphere where you live. Like when I visit, like, you know, my friend Harold McGee, the writer out in San Francisco, he can leave almost anything out on the counter and it just works. Whereas here, like in New York, like it's very rare that I can just leave stuff out on the counter, you know, and have it be
your heater in the wintertime and AC in the summertime will just blow on it and dry it out to death.
Yeah. But, you know, but also remember people that used to live in inhospitable climates, they would do things like if you weren't going to eat the whole thing right away, you do stuff like smear it in fat or throw it into oil or, you know, like any one of like a variety of things to keep the majority as though it were still intact. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Or in Italy, people used to, you know, I was thinking about this, you know, they would even wrap things like, you know, salamis or butter in mozzarella and just keep it that way. Or
you
like
you sell the cheese that's sold like that. What is it called in Italy? I forget.
The
manteca. Yeah, where the butter is inside of the pasta filata cheese.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That originally a preservative? I kind of like that stuff. But was that originally a preservative, or is that just because they like it?
No, I think it was a means of saving the butter. You would just wrap a little caciocavallo around it.
And yeah, because the story that I heard was that in southern Italy, it was too hot to keep the butter just out as was, so they would wrap the mozzarella around it to keep it from kind of going everywhere.
Huh? Yeah. You see, everyone has tactics of how to keep what they want in as good a condition as they can, like whether it's like brining, pickling, oiling. There's these cheeses in that I'm fascinated with now in Turkey that are aged in goat skins.
Interesting.
I've heard of cheese aged in stomachs. I haven't heard of cheese aged in goat skins, but hey, why not? It's a natural
it's
wrapper.
Good.
Do you think the FDA would let those in? Just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, FDA.
Yeah,
would.
That's your Saran wrap back in the day. Just like slaughter a goat, wrap it around the cheese form, and you're done.
Easy. We were just talking about how, you know, some people would be sort of turned off by the price of cheese paper. Imagine if we tried to sell them a goat skin.
Yeah. Great for merchandising,
yeah,
I'm sure.
I was thinking, imagine trying to get the city to let you sell goat skin wrapped cheese with the hair on the goat skin.
Hey, now, this is hand harvested foraged goat skin from the rooftops of Brooklyn, so I think people would be into it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then I feel like this could be a future exhibit at MOFAD, food storage through the ages.
Oh, it definitely will be. It's just like the thing is, it's such a huge subject.
Oh, I know.
You know what I mean? Like you know, most of the great advances have been in storage or preservation. I mean, like refrigeration. But the thing back to Saran, like people now are getting really bent on the whole plastic thing. So I don't know where we're going to be. I don't know where we're going to be 10 years from now.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting.
I hope where we're going to be, if it's from a personal standpoint, is that something biodegradable could be invented in place of Saran wrap. It's the amount we go through at a cheese shop. I think it is a peeve with a lot of us cheesemongers. The amount we go through is pretty ridiculous. And the amount that any restaurant or culinary business at all goes through of Saran wrap is pretty ridiculous. And if there was something that were a bit better for the environment, since in a way we're kind of trying to be stewards for artisanal work, it would be great.
Yeah.
Well, does that wax stuff work on its own, except for the fact that it unravels? Like, is that little bit of, it's like a little bit of tape enough, or is the plastic still helping? I always go overboard, but what do you think?
I don't know. I feel like Nick, Emily.
I mean, I will say this and that. I mean, I know Neil's Yard in the UK has a minimal use on their Saran wrap, where it really just tries to go over the face, and they
and
try
an
to
elaborate
keep
taping process.
Yeah, an elaborate taping process that I'm don't know if I'd be able to adjust to very quickly. But I think the problem is specifically that the wax does come off, and also that mold doesn't grow very well on the Saran wrap, and mold does attach and grow decently well onto the wax, and there is a little bit more oxidation with that. So I feel like right now wax alone is not the answer, as unfortunate as that is.
Do you think that cheeses are not destroyed by plastic wrap in the way they can be destroyed by vac packing?
I feel like it's kind of two different things. I feel like for me, we were talking about this because vac packing is kind of like, you know, you're kind of suspending it. You're almost turning it into a different element because it's totally devoid of oxygen, and it will continue to age in the backpack and kind of become something entirely different. Whereas for me, a cheese that's like badly wrapped in Saran wrap will just die. That's just my personal opinion. But all right, well, we've got a minute or two left, and we wanted to talk about, Dave, I don't know if you have any cling wrap pet peeves, but I feel like we all in the cheese business have certain things that, you know, just drive you nuts. I will begin. I hate it when people use too much Saran wrap and form what is, in fact, kind of like a bustle on the back of the cheese, where like it's just this huge extra clump of Saran wrap that has nowhere to go. And so they put it in the case and it kind of starts to unravel on its own.
I call that a cheese mullet. Like when it has like a mullet and you're like, just tuck in the mullet. Tuck it in.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not necessary.
Nobody wants a cheese mullet.
No.
Minor twofold. I hate when I get a bad wheel of Saran wrap that has no stretching capacity, and just anytime you touch a finger to it or anything more than the heel of your hand, it just breaks, and any like edge of cheese breaks. And second, I hate the teeth on Saran wrap. I cut my damn hands on those so much. I get worse cuts from those than I've ever gotten from a knife. It's so annoying.
And
so those
yet,
are my two pet peeves.
And yet the slidey one is even worse.
Oh,
the thing with the slide cutter is just such a pain, I can't even begin to deal with it.
And when someone gets rid of the thing, then you can't cut it at all, and then you're ripping off those weird shards. They come off in those weird, there's no cutting implement at all, and then you don't have the knife right there, and things are getting messed up, and it's wrapping around your forearm.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
Terrifying.
worst nightmare. No blades in the Saran wrap at all. That would be horrifying.
The horror.
I hate it when someone takes a small piece of really runny cheese and wraps it in a bunch of Saran wrap, and then it ends up being a scrape-a-thon when I'm trying to undo it.
Oh, yeah. Pet peeves, I feel like, badly wrapped soft cheese in Saran wrap, it just becomes like a weird game of like hot potato. You're just like, okay, what do I do with this? It's like trying to contain a puddle in Saran wrap. It's not easy. Yeah. But all right, well, we have unfortunately run out of time on the show today, but Dave, thank you so much for your insights. Nick, thank you so much for coming on the show as well. Emily, thank you for all the research and development and everything. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Cutting the Curd.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.